Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Oh, in the mid-60s. 82 degrees right now in Nashville at 11 o'clock.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. Hot town, summer in the city, and we're listening back to some of our favorite summery segments. Gary Oldman and Simon Pegg talk about summer movies, and Cal Ripken Jr. talks about America's pastime. So grab your radio and head to the beach, but don't forget to slather on the sunscreen.
I think you missed a spot. Let me get it for you, Peter.
We'll be back before we even turn the slightest bit pink right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad today denied that his government had anything to do with the massacre at Hula last month. More than 100 people were killed, nearly half of them children. In a speech to Parliament today, Assad condemned the attacks, which he called abominable, saying that even monsters would not commit such crimes. He blamed foreign-backed terrorists and extremists. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says the U.S. is putting more pressure on Russia to join international efforts to bring about change in Syria. She says in talks with her Russian counterpart, she's conveyed the importance of Russia's help.
I made it very clear that there would be no point to any meeting unless it included all elements of Kofi Annan's plan, and that certainly means we have to focus on a path forward for a political transition. Assad's departure does not have to be a precondition, but it should be an outcome. So that the people of Syria have a chance to express themselves.
Clinton told reporters she'll meet Wednesday in Turkey with representatives from a number of countries in the region concerned about a full-fledged civil war in Syria. Parts of Tahrir Square in the Egyptian capital of Cairo remain closed after big protests overnight following the conviction of former President Hosni Mubarak. He was given a life sentence for complicity in the killing of protesters in last year's uprising. But protesters were angry that other senior officials were acquitted, and two of his sons and him were cleared of corruption. Prosecutors say they will appeal. The BBC's Yolanda Nell reports from Cairo.
Only a few demonstrators are now milling around Tahrir Square in central Cairo, having camped out there through the night. Railings have been dragged across main entry points, and the roundabout remains at least partly closed off to traffic. Large crowds remained in the square through the night and on the streets of other major Egyptian cities. In the provincial towns of Hurghada and Fayoum, there were attacks on the campaign offices of the presidential candidate Ahmed Shafiq, who was a close ally of Mubarak. Many protesters expressed anger that the former president and his interior minister weren't given the death sentence.
The BBC's Yolanda Nell. Hundreds of women demonstrated in Istanbul again a day against an anti-abortion push. Peter Kenyon reports.
The hastily arranged rally was staged in the wake of a sudden move to restrict abortion by the ruling AK party, whose leaders are deeply religious Muslims. Columnist Asla Aydin Tashbash says she was stunned by the speed with which the issue flared up.
I just couldn't believe it. In Turkish Islamist literature or politics, there's never been an abortion issue.
Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan has compared abortion to murder, and the health ministry is reportedly drafting legislation to ban the procedure after 4 weeks, with limited exceptions. Current law allows abortions up to 10 weeks after conception. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Istanbul.
This is NPR News. In London, the River Thames is alive with a rainbow of colors and 1,000 boats. Larry Miller reports it's part of the Royal Jubilee weekend, celebrating Queen Elizabeth's 60 years on the British throne.
From her purple, red, and gold royal barge, the Queen smiles and waves to the many thousands lining the River Thames, its banks and its bridges, serenaded appropriately by Handel's Water Music, written for the coronation barge of King George I. As the Queen passes, spontaneous cheers. Next to Her Majesty in full military regalia, her husband, Prince Philip, along with Prince Charles and Camilla, grandsons Prince Harry and Prince William, and his wife, Kate. Among the vessels are canoes and kayaks, even gondolas from Venice. There are also 10 music barges with choirs, bagpipers, and orchestras. For NPR News, I'm Larry Miller in London.
British entertainer Richard Dawson died last night. American television watchers in the 60s will associate him with this theme. Dawson played one of the POWs on Hogan's Heroes, the Cockney one. A decade later, he was the host of the game show Family Feud, where families competed to guess the most popular answers in surveys. Dawson won an Emmy for that show. Besides saying, the survey says, Dawson was known for kissing all the women contestants. His son says he died at a Los Angeles hospital from complications related to esophageal cancer. Richard Dawson was 79. I'm Noor Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Poetry Foundation, celebrating 100 years of Poetry Magazine, online at poetryfoundation.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. You are fabulous. It is June at last, and that means another year is half gone, and you still haven't started that novel. But it also means you can procrastinate outside because it's summer.
I'm spending all day sunbathing. Watch your leathery back, crazy tanning lady.
Think of today's show as a primer for summer. We're going to talk summer movies with summer movie actors, and we're going to review some important relaxation opportunities. And then, of course, we're going to enjoy the classic summertime pastime.
Kite surfing.
No, Carl, actually, I was talking about baseball.
Knock yourself out, old-timer. I'll be kite surfing.
We begin with a man who has starred in more than his share of blockbuster summer movies, Air Force One, the Batman trilogy, the Harry Potter series, and many others.
Gary Oldman joined us in February, along with Faith Saley, P.J. O'Rourke, and Charlie Pierce, and expressed some amazement that after chewing scenery around the globe, he got his first Oscar nomination for playing a button-down bureaucrat in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Can you believe I've spent, I've been an actor for 33 years, and I've been in movies for nearly 25, and I've played my share of psychos and weirdos bouncing off the scenery, and they give me a nomination for something that is so understated.
Yeah, it's a great performance if for that reason. You do so much while doing so little, if you will. You did play, that's a compliment, people. It's about subtlety. It's about craft. But I remember every time I would go and see a big movie in the 90s, you were the psychopathic villain. And there's The Fifth Element, there's Air Force One,
yep.
There's Going Back to the Professional.
Yes.
I mean, was it a little weird that for a period of about 10 years when anybody said, we need somebody that the entire world will loathe?
Yes. It can get a little tiresome. I mean, you're at the mercy of the imagination of people that are casting you.
Right.
And I did get the sort of typecasting thing got a grip on me for a while.
Gary, what do you think it is about you that makes you so good at playing creepy?
Other than the fact that you've killed a bunch of guys.
Yeah, other than that. You know, I don't really know. If you met me in person, people are always surprised. I look much bigger on the screen than I am in real life. I mean, if I take my clothes off naked, I look like a boiled chicken. I don't know how this has happened, but it has.
I just had this image of, say, Harrison Ford in a death battle with a boiled chicken.
You held your own in that fist fight for a boiled chicken very well.
Oh, yes.
Where he utters the immortal line, isn't it? Get off my plane.
Oh. You know what's funny is we're talking to you, and I'm listening to your voice, and I'm saying to myself first, well, that's not what Gary Oldman sounds like. And then the second thing I think to myself is, I have no idea what you really sound like.
I don't think I do anymore.
Well, that's the question, because, yeah. I mean, you have done so many different, not just accents, but voices. You've played Americans of, like, 8 different kinds. You've played Russians, and Lord knows what Dracula was.
Well, and, yeah, I mean, the funny thing is that for playing the quintessential Englishman, George Smiley, I worked with a coach to get my English accent back.
Really?
I went to a New Yorker to learn how to speak English.
Is it? You are, of course, one of your next big movies coming out is the third of Christopher Nolan's Batman movies.
Yes.
And you play Commissioner Gordon, iconic American comic book character. Of course, Christian Bale, who's from Wales, is playing Batman.
Yes.
Michael Caine is playing Alfred. He's not even pretending not to be British.
No, he's not pretending. Yes.
And Christopher Nolan, the director and writer, is British as well. Do you guys ever get together and go, why us?
Yes, we sit around as good Englishmen do at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, drinking tea, going, what happened?
Gary, when we're in the middle of, because we live in the middle of this, we don't sense, except for obviously the different regional ones, we don't sense there being an American accent. So how do you learn to talk American? I mean, what do you do?
The thing in the American voice is the R's.
The R's.
Yeah, but they all have a different kind of musicality. I'll give you an example. If you've got you still have the sound of the Italian in the Italian New York, and the inflection at the end always tends to go down. So you'd say something like, you'd have the classic mobster saying is, "Hey, forget about it. It all goes down. It's like this at the end." And then if you've got Irish-American, the Irish all goes up. So it all goes up at the end. You'd go, forget about it.
I'm sorry, point of personal privilege. Do a Jew, please.
Let's forget about it. Everybody else did.
Gary, you've played such a breadth of characters and so many of them nefarious. What is the strangest encounter with a fan that you've ever had?
The strangest encounter. I had a little office, and it was public knowledge that I was up there. And occasionally, I would have people outside, and they'd want a photograph with me, or they'd want an autograph. And I think the weirdest thing was I got a knock at the door one day, and I opened the door, and there was a young lady there who had a drawing, a sort of template of me on her boob. And
was it a permanent drawing?
Was it a tattoo?
Yeah, and she was going to get it tattooed and wanted me to sign my signature under the face, which was sort of just below her nipple.
Mm. Below her nipple? Because it's important given your range of work. What role was it? Do you know?
It was Dracula.
Oh, of course.
And you have to answer, Gary. Did you sign it?
I'm a gentleman. Of
Well, Gary Oldman, we're delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here today to play a game that this time we're calling
We Are the Most Cheerful, Happy People You've Ever Seen.
Oh, lovely.
Isn't it nice?
Yeah.
These days, halftime at the Super Bowl, it's A-list acts. It's your Bruce Springsteen, U2, Madonna. But once upon a time, on 4 different occasions, in fact, it was a horde of smiley young people who ran onto the playing field to entertain the nation with something wholesome. They were called Up With People. We're going to ask you 3 questions about that group. Answer 2 right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Gary Oldman playing for?
Gary is playing for Jacqueline Turner of Newark, Delaware.
All right, you ready to play? Here is your first question. Up With People was launched in 1965. at a conference in Mackinac Island, Michigan. It became a big group, lasted for years. They have a lot of alumni now. What do current and past members of Up With People call themselves? Is it A, Up With People persons, B, Uppies, or C, Pooples?
Well, I will have to go for Uppies.
Uppies. Yes, in fact, they call themselves Uppies. Quite proudly. Very good, very good. Next question. The first Up With People concert at Mackinac Island had a very unexpected act. Was it A, Glenn Close, the actress, singing her own composition, The Happy Song, B, the young Vincent Furnier, soon to be known as Alice Cooper, or C, the two-year-old Michael Stipe of REM, mumbling, Happy Birthday?
You know what? I'm going to go for B again.
You're going to go for Vincent Furnier, the singer who became Alice Cooper, was a member of Up With People?
Yes.
I'm afraid it was Glenn Close.
It was Glenn Close?
It was Glenn Close. And since you, in your circles, in fact, I believe you'll run into her at the Oscars, let me tell you, she really doesn't like to talk about it.
I can imagine, but I may just have to bring it up now.
You do. Please do tell us what she says. All right.
Okay.
This is exciting, though. It means that you've got one right with one to go. You can win it here if you get this one right.
Okay.
Up With People became famous for doing medleys of classic American songs, but they also wrote their own. Which of these was a real original Up With People song? A, We're American Made and in America We Will Lay. B, What Color Is God's Skin? Or C, We Hate Wars But Love to Win Them?
This is a tough one.
It is.
This is a tough one, because those top two, I think... I'm going to go with B.
B, What Color Is God's Skin?
Yes.
Yes, that's the one.
Yes! Yes, 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 yes.
Oh, we have it.
Oh. It was all I could do not to shout that out, because I owe my freedom from drugs to Up With People.
Do you really?
I walked into Washington Square in Greenwich Village, blasted out of my mind on LSD, and there was Up With People singing What Color Is God's Skin.
No, really?
And I have never touched the stuff since.
All right.
Absolutely true.
Carl, how did Gary do in our quiz?
Gary, you had two correct answers, so you win for Jacqueline Turner.
Oh!
Right. Gary Oldman, thank you so much for joining us. What a pleasure to talk to you. Bye-bye. Coming up, a Bluff the Listener game about cutting-edge relaxation technology, and geek movie star Simon Pegg talks about making out with Princess Leia. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Pimsleur Language Programs, offering tools to record an answering machine greeting in 45 languages. Learn more at Pimsleur.com. The National Association of Realtors and Advocate for Home Ownership, more at houselogic.com/homeownership. And Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles, at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. Member support is our most important source of funding at WPLN. Pledge now in support of Nashville Public Radio at WPLN.org, and you'll have a chance to win a trip for two to Ireland. Our summer e-pledge drawing will be held this Friday. Details are at WPLN.org. It's 19 minutes after 11, 81 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Kassel, and here again is your host, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Today is our summer solstice celebration. We'll be dancing naked at midnight, enacting ancient fertility rites, and sacrificing goats to ensure a fruitful growing season.
Yes, yes. And while we do that, you'll be listening to some interesting segments from recent shows. For example, this Bluff the Listener game from June of 2008.
Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Chris Olson from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Hey, Chris, how are things in Green Bay?
Wet.
I bet. Are you still mourning the loss of Brett Favre?
Actually, I'm not a big football fan.
What?
Yeah, exactly. You know, you tell people that here, it's like coming out of the closet or something. Oh, you don't like football? You need to meet my friend Steve. He doesn't like football either.
But they're becoming more tolerant of you people, I understand.
So
that's great. That's great. Well, welcome to our show, Chris. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Chris's topic?
It's summertime and the living is easy, but I want things to be easier, dagnabbit.
Finally, it's summer, and like most Americans, we are looking forward to putting in a lot of effort in order to do as little as possible. This week we read about a new innovation that will make our leisure time even more leisurely. Our panelists will tell you about three such great leaps forward. Of course, only one of them is real. Pick that real one. You will win our prize. Ready to play?
Yeah.
All right. First, let's hear from Roy Blunt, Jr.
You've heard of power naps. Now, Leisure Systems, Inc. has introduced the Power Hammock. A retractable brace stabilizes the hammock. 3% of summertime injuries are hammock-related. While you climb into it and until you're sure you're ready to dangle. With fingertip controls, you can set yourself a rocking at various speeds, with or without musical accompaniment. And you can mist yourself with a cooling spray or with refreshing natural aromas. And you can raise a net around yourself in case of bugs. Concept flaws forced withdrawal of the solar-powered model. Alas, you can't run anything on shade. But the standard two-cycle motor is more fuel efficient than most weed whackers, and quieter, too.
The Power Hammock from Roy. The next story of making the lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer even lazier, hazier, and crazier comes from Amy Dickinson.
Summer is so annoying. What with the mosquitoes, heat stroke, the New York Yankees. But of course, no summertime activity is more bothersome than having to hold an ice cream cone and slowly twist it while licking up those pesky drips. I mean, could ice cream be a little more trouble? Now, the world's laziest licker has invented the battery-powered ice cream cone. A gadget rotates the cone while the consumer merely has to stick out his tongue while the ice cream passes by. The good news is that it only costs $10, and the company that developed the cone says they're launching a new product for the fall, fast-acting baked beans.
Your last story of a way to slow down even further this summer comes from Charlie Pierce.
The officials at the Cherokee County Fair in Oklahoma will be experimenting this July with a product guaranteed to gladden the hearts of weary parents and their dry cleaners, nonstick cotton candy. Thanks to DARPA, the United States Department of Defense's top secret laboratory usually deals with alien technologies captured from fallen spaceships, a non-sticky sweetener made for desert sea rations called Heatrex 5 will be used in the manufacture of some of the cotton candy at this year's fair. I hope we can maintain the essential integrity of cotton candy while simultaneously making it neater, said fair spokesman Randy Voss. One longtime fairgoer is skeptical. If cotton candy doesn't stick to your face, doesn't that just make it a bowl of sugar on a stick, she said.
All right, let's review your choices. Presumably, this summer, you could enjoy the effort-saving benefits of one of these things, either from Roy Blunt, Jr., a power hammock that rocks you at the speed you select, from Amy Dickinson, a self-turning ice cream cone which rotates the ice cream in front of your tongue, or from Charlie Pierce, non-stick cotton candy, saving you those sticky moments. Which of these is the real story of a labor-saving innovation for the summer?
They all sound pretty plausible, actually, but I think I'm going to go with the power hammock.
The power hammock. All right. Well, your story then is Roy's of the power hammock. Well, we're so proud we were able to speak to the inventor of this device.
Cone-shaped plastic toy that spins your ice cream automatically. It saves you all of that hard work of having to turn the ice cream cone manually.
That was Rick Hartman, professional toy designer, talking about his latest innovation, the motorized ice cream cone holder. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry for you. I'm sorry for my children who will want one, yet not get one. Chris, I'm sorry because, in fact, as you now know, Amy had the correct answer, the true story. You did, however, pick Roy's, meaning you don't win our prize, but you do earn a point for Roy for simply fooling you.
By the way, Roy, if you don't patent that idea, I'm going to on Monday.
Really?
That's a great one. Thank you so much for playing, Chris.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Summer means summertime movies. And back in June of 2011, we interviewed an actor who not only stars in them, like the Mission Impossible movies and the new Star Trek, but grew up watching them, just like we did. Although he took it a bit far.
Simon Pegg joined us along with Mo Rocca, Faith Saley, and Luke Burbank, and started by telling us about his intimate relationship with Princess Leia, who he kissed every evening.
When you were growing up, you write about how much, for example, you loved Star Wars. You tell a story about how you kissed your picture of Princess Leia every mm-hmm. night before going to bed.
I did, very, very sort of chivalrously. There was no seemliness, and it wasn't like a big snog, which is, you know, like a French kiss. I just used to plant a small peck on her lips every night before bed.
That's really sweet.
Sort of like the one she gives Luke in the first film, of course.
Thank God, too, because we find some stuff out about that relationship.
Yeah, it's not like I was kissing my sister. That would be weird.
No, that'd be awful. And I love the story you tell. You were at a comic convention in 2004, your own movie, Shaun of the Dead, which I can say with confidence is the funniest zombie movie ever made.
Thank you.
You were there.
Eat that, Zombieland.
Yeah, I know, exactly. And you I love the story that you were like signing autographs for fans of your movie, and you got up and you ran over to stand in the line to get an autograph from Carrie Fisher.
I did. I hacked off a whole bunch of people that had queued up to that had lined up to pay $15 for my autograph, and I joined a line that they were in, and they sort of turned around. What the hell are you doing here?
I just paid
to meet you.
Are you allowed to do that? Can you cross that line? Because you're really confusing the categories, aren't you? I mean,
that's the thing. That's the whole thing, is that I'm a fan of films and stuff, and just because I'm working in them doesn't mean I don't get excited when I get the chance to meet Carrie Fisher. And I wandered over and lined up and waited about an hour, and I came face to face with her, and I told her that story that I would kiss her picture before bed every night, and she sort of looked at me with a slightly worried look in her eye. And she said, "Do you feel better for telling me that?" I just said, "Yes, thank you," and I walked away.
Have you ever actually been starstruck?
I think, you know what, I had another Star Wars experience at Comic-Con last year. I'd just come off from my own panel. It had gone very well. The perfect time to meet someone that I admired and be like, you know, I'm clearly an industry professional, not just a fan. And I bumped into Harrison Ford coming from the stairs. But instead of sort of like introducing myself as a fellow movie actor and artist, I giggled and just ran away.
And we understand that like Star Wars played an important role. I mean, you were in some sort of, you're under anesthesia, and Star Wars somehow brought you out of this?
Yes, my mom has it on a list of things to do in case I ever go into a coma. I was in a hospital. I was having a birthmark removed when I was a kid. I had a little mark on my head that they whipped off. And I was under anesthetic, and somebody was watching Star Wars on the ward, and the sound of R2-D2 screaming brought me out of my anesthetic.
And I know this is difficult for you, but you write about a lot of personal things in your book, and this is one of them, and it's a bit of a trauma. I wanted to talk to you about the Star Wars prequels.
Oh, God.
They were hard for you.
And
I think they were hard for a lot of people.
They were. But, yeah, I know. But so this was tough.
Jar Jar Binks.
You'd grown up with Star Wars. You'd wrote your thesis about it. And you go to the theater, as I'm sure, like, say, for example, I did. So excited. And there you are.
Peter, I feel like you're living vicariously through Simon.
Now. I know. This is like listening to you being in therapy right now.
I think we're doing good work here, and I think we need to let Simon talk.
How did that make the both of you feel?
Oh, God, don't.
Now, all right. But what would you say? Okay, what would you say if George Lucas called you and asked you if you would consider playing the young Jar Jar Binks in another prequel?
There aren't curse words bad enough for what I'm doing.
Simon, you sound like such a normal guy. But you're in all these amazing movies. Do you ever have like a movie star diva moment?
I killed a bunch of people.
Yeah. And he got away with it. Yeah. Why? Because he's a movie star. They can do that. They get like, what, 5 kills before they get in trouble? I think it's like a thing they do.
Yeah.
I can't wait for number 5.
Your book is called Nerd Do Well. Is there anything out there that's too nerdy even for you? Have you ever met somebody who's in some cultural subculture so weird you're like, oh my God, that's just too strange?
Babylon 5.
Really? You draw the line at Babylon 5.
You can't. You can be nerdy about lots of things, you know. You can be nerdy about food and football and all sorts. And, you know, there are sports nerds that I don't understand.
Right. What's the point with sports? They never fly, for example. That seems always
disappointing. Well, I mean, look at the Canucks. I mean, that was, you know, those people, they cared a lot so much that they destroyed their own city.
Right.
You know.
That is a weird reaction, right? I'm so sad my team lost.
You know, I've been to a Canucks game. I went to a Canucks game last year, and I got it. I completely got it. And I think they were that close, I would have been annoyed.
So much so that you would have thrown a tire iron through a Starbucks window?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
It's true, though. You don't see Star Wars fans rioting because the rebels lost the Battle of the Ice Planet of Hoth, do you?
You should have been in the theater I was in when The Phantom Menace was on. Believe me, there was...
Well, Simon Pegg, we're delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here to play...
And he makes a poke check while head digging in the grease.
You have no idea what Carl's talking about, most likely, because he's talking about hockey. This is a sport that's a bit like soccer, played with sticks on ice. And this week they had a big game of some sort. So we thought we'd ask you 3 questions about this very real and interesting sport, which has fans all over the world, including outside Canada.
I'm going to ace this. I went to one game once. This is going to be... you've picked the wrong subject. I'm going to know everything.
You went to a hockey game once.
Tom Cruise took me to a hockey game. How about that?
Oh, wow.
Oh, wait a minute.
You dropped something.
Yeah, don't hit your foot.
Tom Cruise took you to a hockey game?
Yeah.
Did he just call you up out of the blue and say, let's go see some hockey? How did that come about?
No, we were working on... We're doing Mission Impossible in Canada, and the Canucks are playing, so we went to see them. And it was a lot of fun. I can't understand anything that happened that night because it was confusing and there were lots of men fighting and it was cold.
And Tom Cruise was jumping on the seat in front of you. So
right.
You didn't see anything.
We had fun. Tom had to explain everything to me bit by bit. He used to play hockey, so he was able to sort of... I still don't get it, though.
I'm sorry, my brain just shorted out. All right. Anyway, well, that's okay, because if you get 2 questions right, you will win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their voicemail. Carl, who is Simon Pegg playing for?
Simon is playing for Joseph Trebing of Manassas, Virginia.
Here.
Joseph!
Hey!
Hey!
Here's your first question, Simon. Hockey goes back quite a long way. Back in 1916, in fact, there was a Canadian hockey team with the official name of what? A, the Edmonton Swastikas. B, the Toronto Foaming Mooses, or C, the Vancouver Fungi?
I know what it is.
I know this.
All right. If you want to take a second to call Tom Cruise, you can. I'm sure he'll know.
I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B, the Toronto Foaming Mooses?
Yeah.
No.
No, it was actually the Edmonton Swastikas.
Yes.
Really?
Did you know that?
How did you know that?
The reason I knew that is because it would be really nasty for you to entrap someone into saying something like that if it weren't the answer. Like, if you know what I mean? It would have been really nasty if he had said, like, oh, the Edmonton Swastikas, then we would all have been like, why did you think that? It's the wrong answer. So So it had to be the right answer.
You're right. I wouldn't be that mean. But yes, it was the Edmonton Swastikas. It was a girls' hockey team. And I want you to picture 1916, all these nice, proper Canadian girls sitting there with their hockey sticks and their sweaters with swastikas on them. Because we all know, until it was ruined by some people we won't mention, the swastika was actually a perfectly acceptable symbol and used all over the world. So, you know, just funny crosses. No biggie. All right, you have two more chances here.
It's very hard to goose step in ice skates.
This is. The winner of this is your second question. The winner of the Stanley Cup gets to keep the trophy for a year. So, for example, the Boston Bruins, who just won, each members of their team will carry it around with them for a period of time. After his team won the Cup in 1996, one member of the Colorado Avalanche used it to do what? A, brew beer. B, baptize his daughter right in it. Or C, catch rain from a leaking roof in his house.
Oh, I hope it's B.
Me I'm too. Sorry, I'm not flying. Sorry.
I'm sorry, I can't get those sexy Nazi skaters out of my head.
I know, it's terrible.
It's B again. I'm going B.
You're
B.
Right, he baptized his daughter.
Yay!
Yeah.
To our knowledge, two hockey players to date have used it to baptize their children.
How big is it?
It's big enough that you can fill it with water and dip your baby in it.
Oh, okay. but Baptist kids don't get baptized until they're like 13 or 14, right? So that would be difficult.
That would be hard, I think. Last question. If you get this right, you win it all. Hockey is enjoyed by a few isolated enthusiasts in most of the world, but it is quite popular in Canada. In fact, it's so popular in Canada that one of these things is now true. A, hospitals in British Columbia had to stop surgeons from talking about hockey during surgery. B, the number one first name given to baby boys in the year 1987 was Gretzky. Little Gretzky McKenzie. Mm-hmm. Or C, a law was passed making body checking in grocery stores illegal.
Oh.
I'm going to go with A.
A, hospitals in British Columbia can't let the surgeons talk about hockey?
Yeah.
You're right. Oh, that's the problem. They found out.
Joseph.
That surgeons were talking about hockey too much. They were getting distracted. So they had to stop. Congratulations, Carl. How did Simon Pegg do in our quiz?
He had two correct answers, Peter. That's good enough to win for Joseph Treving. Congratulations,
Yay!
Simon.
Yay! Simon Pegg is a writer, actor, and author of the new book, Nerd Do Well. Simon Pegg, thank you so much for playing our game.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Simon.
Hi, Simon.
Great to talk to you. Take care.
Thank you. Bye. I'm going to play me some hockey, hockey. Look, Mom, I'm playing
hockey, just a little ice hockey, hockey. When we return, last-minute summer camp ideas and the Iron Man himself, Cal Ripken Jr., tries to extend his streak to include our game. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight, nearly 500 miles on 1 gallon of fuel, to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. Angie's List, with reviews of local contractors and doctors in 500 categories, with ratings based only on member feedback, angieslist.com. And Esurance, an Allstate company, offering tools to help guide customers through the car insurance process, from quote to claim. Learn more at esurance.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
After the military intervention in Libya, President Obama trumpeted decisive action to protect civilians. Now, more than a year after the bloody crackdown started, Kofi Annan declares Syria at the tipping point, and the White House responds with more sanctions and more diplomacy, which many complain don't go nearly far enough. I'm Neil Conan. The President's choices on Syria. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons from 1 until 3.
You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. Coming up in about 20 minutes at 12 noon is the Splendid Table. Right now the time is 11:38. It's 82 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here again is your host, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. So, it is summertime, and the radio show is easy. At least it is for us, because we're taking the week off. You still have to sit and listen to it.
We're doing our best to help, though, with our guide to summer, such as this Bluff the Listener game from last July, which might give you an idea of what to do with your kids while they're on vacation.
Hi, everyone. Wait, don't tell me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is Heidi Conrad from the St. Charles, Missouri.
St. Charles, Missouri. How are things in St. Charles?
Great.
What do you do there?
I work for a financial services technology firm.
Financial services technology firm?
Mm-hmm. So exciting, huh?
Yeah. You sound excited about it.
I wish. Yeah. I am.
Oh, yeah. They might be listening. Good, yes. Heidi, good to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Heidi's topic?
Why, when I was your age, I was opening beer bottles with my teeth.
I believe that children are the future. And if that's true, our future is going to be obese, lazy, and good for nothing but playing Angry Birds. But somebody is trying to do something about this. Our panelists are going to read you three stories of parents going the extra mile to toughen their kids up. Guess the real story, you'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to go?
Yep.
First, let's hear from Luke Burbank.
It's a tradition nearly as old as summer itself, the adorably adorable children's lemonade stand, with its charmingly substandard signage and promise of refreshment on a sweltering day. But what about the times that beverage isn't actually all that refreshing? Enter Rick Owens of Escondido, California, who's made it his mission this summer to visit every kid lemonade stand in the city and write reviews of them on Yelp. Lemonade? More like stagnant pond water mixed with battery acid. Owens wrote in one particularly biting review of a stand at 33rd and Ravenna manned by 2 6-year-olds. I sent the brownies back 2 times to no avail. Someone must have switched the recipe with the dirt patties they'd been previously working on in the backyard. Many local parents are upset by this, but Owens stands by his blunt writing. These kids are going to either learn now or later that you've got to stand behind your product. For its part, Yelp says it's powerless to stop Owens from dishing out his brand of tough love, recommending that those offended by the reviews take the ultimate Yelp-based revenge, clicking on that button that says, I did not find this review helpful.
A guy giving out Yelp reviews to lemonade stands in Escondido. Your next story of someone trying to toughen up their kids comes from Kiri O'Connor.
Olivia Dixon is pretty sure the boss is going to chew her out. She has 25 unfilled orders, 123 new emails in her inbox, an uneaten yogurt sweating on her desk, and she's late for a sales meeting. Olivia is 8. Welcome to Office Camp, a.k.a. Ant Farm, where New York kids learn the hard truths of what office life is really like. Just as Mommy does at the office, Olivia sits in on deadly conference calls, faces impossible deadlines on meaningless reports, fights over the good pens in the supply closet, and has to wear Spanx and 3-inch heels all day. Yesterday I got yelled at bad for falling asleep at a meeting, but it was so boring. Olivia told the Wall Street Journal, I cried in the restroom. Olivia's mother said she sent her daughter to drone training when Olivia learned the term business major. I'm a project manager, and there's got to be more to life than that, she said. I want Olivia to be a filmmaker.
Office camp for kids. And your last story of a new way to make children stronger comes from Roy Blunt, Jr.
Rod'em sheep boys and girls. The hot new sport for little kids out west, we learned this week, is rodeo with sheep, also known as mutton busting. Rural young'uns have always tried to ride bucking sheep, pretending they are bulls or broncos, but only lately have arenas, cheering crowds, and corporate marketing been involved. Now companies like Wool Riders Only are advancing mutton busting into the 21st century with codified rules, special gear, and interstate competition to the extent of a 16-stop tour featuring 125 staff sheep who ride in a custom double-deck trailer leading to a world finals in Fresno, California. So parents and other spectators can watch 3 to 7-year-old boys and girls cling to fleece for a few seconds before the muttons bust them.
Okay, Heidi, here are your choices. From Luke Burbank, a guy giving out somewhat brutal Yelp lemonade stand reviews. From Kerry O'Connor, Office Camp, to show the kids what cube life is like. Or from Roy Blunt Jr., mutton busting, little kids riding sheep in rodeos. Which of these is the real story in the week's news?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, gosh.
Is it too late to switch to the limerick?
No, sadly. That's tricky, too.
I think I will go with number three.
You're going to go with the third choice, Roy's choice?
Yeah.
The audience approves.
Because it sounds different.
Mutton busting. Well, we spoke to somebody who helps run this very program for kids.
The kids climb on the back of the sheep, and we open the gate, and they try to ride for 6 seconds.
That was Tommy Guidone. He's the owner of Wool Riders Only. It's a mutton-busting organization. Sheep riding for kids. Congratulations, Heidi. You got it right. Well done.
Yay!
You earned a point for Roy. And you've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home voicemail. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for playing. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's right. I'm on a ride.
When you think summer, you think baseball. Even if you think, oh my gosh, it's summer and I hate baseball, you're still thinking about baseball.
In January of 2011, we got to talk to one of the game's true heroes, Hall of Famer Cal Ripken Jr. He joined us along with panelists Kerry O'Connor, Brian Babylon, and Faith Saley. And we began by asking him about how he felt about the player with the longest active streak, Matt Kemp, then at 204 games in a row.
Yes, I'm monitoring him very closely.
The fact is, if he plays five times as many games as he has now consecutively, he won't even be half the way to your mark. How do you explain that you were able to do that and the players of this era simply can't even get close?
Well, I think the mindset has changed a little bit. They're pumping a whole lot more money into the players. The investment's higher. And they want to be a little more cautious.
They're actually injecting them with money?
That's what it seems like. Yeah. We're going through the free agent list. But certainly there's more at risk now, and the owners have taken a much more cautious approach.
You grew up in a baseball family. Obviously, your father, Cal Ripken Sr., played the game and was a coach. Was when you were a kid, did you ever... I mean, you hear stories about athletic kids who were pressured by their parents to play. Was that ever your experience?
No, my dad was away most of the time because baseball requires you to be away most of the time. So at home, my mom played the role of dad and my mom. And no pressure. You know, he wanted us to find what we love to do, all the kids in the family, and really going for it. That's his secret to success was to find something you love and then put all your might towards it.
When your mother was playing the role of both father and mother, did that include arguments? Did she stand there and go, he should play, he should be practicing? No, why don't you give him a break? No, he should be out there.
Well, she did have multiple personalities, yes.
That would help, I guess. And your brother played as well, Billy
yep.
Ripken?
Yeah, brother Billy was 4 years younger than me, and he got drafted and moved through the system and came to the big leagues around 87, and we were teammates.
Oh, that's great. And Billy Ripken, he, of course, has the greatest baseball card ever, doesn't he?
Yes, he wrote something on the bottom of the knob of the bat, kind of as an internal funny joke where he could find his bat more easily.
Yeah, and then I should say that the thing that he wrote on the thing on the bottom of his bat is unpronounceable on public radio. We cannot say it.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say it. Good thing you stopped me.
Oh, yeah. Because I know you're famous for your foul mouth, Cal.
Is it a verb?
One's a noun.
Yeah.
Face is the second part of it.
Yes. It is. The second word is face, as you say, and the first word is a descriptor.
This is like a parlor game.
It really
is.
Right. Could be a verb.
Also, this is a clue that will mean a lot to a public radio audience. It is an alliterative phrase. So go on. So he wrote this on the bottom of his bat, and...
A card photographer asked him if he would pose for a baseball card photo, and he lifted the bat up on his shoulder, and the knob was revealed, and he took the picture, and it went to print with that expression on the bottom of the bat.
Right.
That's really great.
You were... one of the reasons everybody was so excited. I remember so vividly that game where you broke the record and you ran around the field and shook everybody's hand, and it was a great, great moment. But one of the reasons people were so happy was, frankly, it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. That you were a player that everybody could get behind. You were a gentleman on and off in the field. You were a role model, which is a role I know you take seriously. Does that ever get to be a drag? Do you ever, like, want to go out and behave really badly, but you can't because you're Cal Ripken Jr.?
The answer to that is yes. I'd like to be able to behave really badly and not have it matter.
Really?
You know, the funny part about it is I'm okay with being out in public, except when you get in a fight with your wife or you get in a fight with, you know, your kids, or your daughter calls you a name and storms off and you feel pretty helpless to do anything.
Does she call you the name that was on the bottom of your brother's bat?
Sorry, my daughter's name is Rachel. Sorry, Rachel, but yes, she did.
Did she really?
Oh, my goodness.
Did she really?
Does he know who you are? You're Cal Ripken Jr.
Exactly.
Mr. Ripken, did you have any rituals that you did every single time for 2,000-some-odd times?
How do I tell this to you in a way that doesn't make me look too bad?
Oh, no one's listening.
You know, some people didn't launder their shirt nor their underwear and all that kind of stuff, and all the time they played for superstitions. I didn't do that. But there was one piece of equipment I wore the whole time for the whole streak.
Really?
It was a metal cup
that
protected...
Yes.
We're with you.
My dad, it is kind of weird, and this is true, is that, you know, when we went away from home, Dad kind of brought me down, gave me an Oreo bag, and then presented me with a cup and said, you know,
you're a man.
Welcome to manhood.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Well, that's how he got his nickname, the Iron Man, right there.
Yeah, there you go.
Exactly. Do you still enjoy baseball? I mean, I know you run three minor league teams and you teach baseball, but do you ever say, oh, what should I do this afternoon? I know. I shall go to the ballpark and take in a baseball game.
You know, I watch it not nearly as closely as I used to. And I'm also sucked into being the assistant coach of my boys' baseball team. I like...
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. You're the assistant coach? This guy is coaching the baseball team, and he's, like, looking over, and Cal Ripken standing in the corner going, well, I don't know about that.
He's cutting oranges in the corners.
You could do that, says Cal Ripken Jr., if you want to. The assistant coach, what, was coaching too serious, too much of a commitment? Because I know how you are about commitment.
Well, you know, the secret here is that you get to run the team, and you don't get blamed for the mistakes.
Cal Ripken, we are thrilled to have you with us and delighted to talk to you. But we have also asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You want to see a real streak? Here, hold my pants.
So you're known for your, quote, streak, but we don't think it counts as a streak because you played every game wearing clothes. We're going to ask you three questions about real streakers. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl's voice... on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Cal Ripken Jr. playing for?
Cal is playing for Lorraine Shaw Cook of Eastchester, New York.
You ready to play, Cal?
I am.
All right, sir. One popular target for streakers every year is Wimbledon, the tennis tournament there. In fact, streaking is so common that one of these things is true. Is it A, an estimated 15% of ticket holders are there for the pastime known as streak peeking? B, you can place a bet with a bookie whether or not a streaker will appear at any given tournament. Or C, the stands all have signs saying any disrobing will not be tolerated.
I like number three.
You like number three? These the very British
that
signs.
That sounds very British.
Any disrobing will not be tolerated. That would be a charming British sign, but no, I'm afraid the answer was, in fact, B. You can place a bet with bookies every year so whether there'll be streakers. A recent Wimbledon, the bookies were giving 6-1 against.
I thought that was winter ball. I messed up on that one.
Now, you still have two more chances. We know you don't give up. One of the greatest streakers of all time, or so he claims, is a man named Mark Roberts, and his greatest exploit was sneaking onto the field of the Super Bowl, dressed as a referee, but his attempt to shock America with his naked self on the field went wrong. What happened? Was it A, a player mistaking him for a real referee started screaming at him and he burst into tears? B, the Velcro in his tearaway pants got stuck so he was arrested while still trying to tear off his pants? Or C, he did it right after the famous Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction so nobody cared?
I'd say the Velcro got stuck.
You think? He said, quizzically.
Yes.
right. Well, I'm afraid it's not. The answer, in fact, was C.
It was.
What this guy did, this guy, again, he streaked all over the world, and he actually got onto the field of the Super Bowl dressed as a referee, and he tore off his clothes and danced around in a thong on the field until a player tackled him, and nobody noticed because they had all just seen Janet Jackson's boob. Last question. Even among streakers, there are some feats revered above all others, including which of these? One of these really happened. A, the guy who streaked at the Westminster Dog Show wearing nothing but a leash held by his clothed dog.
Please be true.
B, the woman who streaked by walking slowly and graciously naked down the red carpet at the 1977 Oscars. Or C, the man who ruined a naked rugby game by running across the field fully clothed.
Number one.
You're gonna go for the guy who went to the streak to the Westminster Dog Show,
yeah,
naked with his clothed dog.
It's too bizarre, and I went with logic on the other two, so I'm going away from logic.
I'm afraid it's not true. I wish it were.
Me too.
I wish it were, but the answer is C. Dunedin, New Zealand hosts a naked rugby bash every year. And one year, a guy wearing a full suit of clothes ran right across the pitch, scandalizing the spectators.
The ball.
So I was 0 for 3.
Hold on. It's not official until we get the official scoring. So, Carl, how did Cal Ripken do in our quiz?
Well, one of the few times in his career, Peter, he struck out on this one. Three incorrect answers, so he needed at least two to win for Lorraine Shaw Cook.
Oh, well. But on the other hand, it was a streak.
Yeah, I gave up after the first two, by the way.
You did? Cal Ripken gives up for the first time in his life. Cal Ripken Jr. is a 19-time All-Star member of the Baseball Hall of Fame. He is leading the search to find the 2011 inductee into the Energizer Keep Going Hall of Fame. Cal Ripken Jr., so thrilled to talk to you. Thank you so much for all you did for the game, for us watching the game, and for being here today. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for homeownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. The Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness, on the web at melvilletrust.org. And the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for improving education and enrichment for children, both in and out of school, at wallacefoundation.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago, in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks, our house manager is Don Hall, our intern is Kate Casey, our web guru is Beth Novi, engineers include Les Pilarczyk and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Liedemann composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Waltrover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Thanks to all of our panelists, all of our guests, and thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal, and we'll see you next week. Is NPR.
And this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. Support for programming comes from WPLN listener members and from Fox Broadcasting Company, presenting the season premiere of Master Chef, the search for America's best amateur chef. MasterChef airs Monday after the Hell's Kitchen premiere at 7 Central on Fox 17.
Hello again, I'm Warren Alney. On To the Point, Florida has decided presidential elections before and could do it again. How come election officials are purging the voting rolls of more Democrats and independents than Republicans? Next time on To the Point from Public Radio International.
Weeknights at 8 o'clock.
Flamenco music may not be a natural fit for the sitar, but Anushka Shankar says Spanish flamenco and Indian ragas share one thing in common,
fancy footwork.
In Indian dance, people wear bells on the feet to accentuate the foot patterns, and it's absolutely in tandem with the percussionist. And in flamenco, the same is true.
A Raga Flamenco Journey with Anushka Shankar, next time on The World. Weeknights at 9 o'clock.
Nashville weather for this afternoon, mostly sunny skies and the high in the mid-80s. Tonight, showers and thunderstorms likely, mainly after 1 a.m., with mostly cloudy skies and the low in the mid-60s. And for Monday tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms likely. Some of the storms could be severe tomorrow, with mostly cloudy skies and the high in the lower 80s. Right now, it's 83 degrees in